The content in this audio recording provides general information. However, it does not substitute legal advice or opinion. This information is best used in conjunction with legal advice from an experienced member of our team. Why you may need to be cautious even in an amicable separation. An amicable separation is one goal that many separating couples aim to have. While this intention is admirable, remaining amicable is not always a reality despite both parties' best intentions, and it will depend not only on you, but also how your former partner approaches a separation. An amicable separation often looks and sounds like this. Both parties are able to talk respectfully. Both are continuing to meet their obligations, irrespective of their separation. This can include paying bills and having a genuine focus and shared interest in maintaining some type of relationship with each other for the benefit of their children and/or for the benefit of themselves. There is an element of goodwill between them, despite the challenging circumstances in which they find themselves. However, even in a separation like this, it is still wise to be cautious and make sure you are fully informed when making decisions when navigating a separation amicably. There are three things to be alert to after separation, even where things are amicable. Keep listening to hear what they are, as well as some examples we see in our practice as family lawyers to illustrate why caution is still required. Firstly, be aware of delay. I'm going to share with you an experience of two people, we'll call them Michelle and Terry, although this is not their real names, who are an example of where an intention to be amicable didn't unfold as they had planned. Michelle had been trying to negotiate a property settlement over the last few years. She has been trying to manage things cooperatively, with the intention to work at a pace that they both agreed that they were comfortable with. But because she's given her former partner some leeway and delayed on progressing the settlement, even though they had come very close in their informal discussions, they are now at a position where his work arrangements have changed considerably. The asset pool now looks quite different to what it did back when they decided to separate. They were trying to amicably work things out, but this has ultimately been to Michelle's detriment because of the additional liabilities that have been incurred due to Terry losing his job over that time. For Michelle, this now means financially, things are looking somewhat different for her than they previously did. Even though Terry had been continuing to pay for some significant expenses as they navigated their settlement, she is now at a disadvantage as the expenses continue, but the asset pool from which to pay these is now significantly smaller. For Terry, who also had intentions to separate amicably and fairly, not only is he without employment, but he also wasn't able to provide for his former spouse in the way that he had intended to. So for the sake of trying to deal with as much of the settlement and separation between themselves, and by not gaining early legal advice, this has unfortunately been to both of their detriment. The key element in this example is that a financial settlement is not determined by looking at the asset pool as and when they separated. We are looking at the asset pool now. The only way to draw a line in the sand is to actually finalize your settlement. Secondly, have a backup plan, even if you are hoping for the best. Another couple, we'll call them Brian and Charlotte, had a different situation. Charlotte had expressed her intention to separate from Brian, and she moved out of the family home with the children. Brian was really hopeful of a reconciliation, so he didn't proactively progress the parenting arrangement by formalizing an agreement. Charlotte was living further away than Brian would have liked, but for the sake of trying to be amicable and there being a possibility of them getting back together, he left that for some time without raising it. Unfortunately for Brian, they didn't get back together as he had hoped. Now, given the time that had passed since Charlotte left, this meant that the court would not change the parenting arrangement in place. It meant that the outcome was different to what it might have been for Brian had he acted earlier, shortly after Charlotte had left the family home. So what can we learn from each experience? Both couples' intentions were to approach their separation amicably. However, they achieved less than ideal outcomes because they weren't informed about the possible consequences of the early decisions they were making and didn't realize their significance at the time because they had delayed getting early advice from a specialist family lawyer. Often in the most amicable of circumstances, people can come to an impasse about a certain issue. Here is another example of a client who came to me with a desire to try and work things out amicably and not go to court. She and her former husband had been able to reach agreements and everything was progressing in a fairly amicable way. But there was one particular issue where they were at an impasse and had very different views about it. And while they were still dealing with each other amicably, there came a point where the assistance and advice of their respective lawyers has meant that they have both achieved the amicable outcome they had planned on. An amicable divorce doesn't necessarily mean you are doing it without involving lawyers. It is just that the processes that you may decide to implement and the strategy that you adopt with the assistance of your lawyer is developed by your lawyer, taking into account your goal of having an amicable separation. Thirdly, don't make promises you can't deliver on. The final important point I want to raise that I find can be a real problem is when people are so amicable initially that they make promises they actually can't deliver on, because neither one of them has received advice, allowing them to make the proposal in an informed way. Rather than having committed to something and then realizing they need to try and get out of it later, they would have been better to just say, "I know we want to try and achieve an amicable agreement, so we each need to go and get some advice about how we're going to do it." This is far preferable to having a situation where one person overpromises, only to have to backtrack. Otherwise, the other person feels as though they are withdrawing from what they had previously agreed to, and that causes friction. Often it means they haven't thought about something really fundamental. For instance, one person is thinking, yes, you can have the holiday house, but what hasn't been considered is how do we refinance the property? Because if the other person doesn't have sufficient income to secure or maintain the refinancing, that then creates larger problems. These are practical things that need to be worked through with the assistance of a team of professionals, including a lawyer, accountant, and often a financial planner. When you are having these very preliminary discussions, reality testing whether what you are going to do is practically achievable is key. Agreeing to something that is fundamentally going to disadvantage you or your former partner for years to come can be avoided if advice is sought early on. So while an amicable separation is to be applauded, it is also important to be realistic. It takes two people to have an amicable separation from start to finish. Be alert but not alarmed and get informed early. Consider all the outcomes that can occur, even for the most well-intentioned of separating couples, and seek specialist advice from a family lawyer to make the best informed decisions for you and for your family.